living as lights in the midst of this dark, messed up world. How do we do it? How far do we go? How far do we push back?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let's put this situation in front of you. What is the problem? What is the solution? You go into a dark room. You go to flip the light switch on. You hear it flip, but nothing happens. Ah, there's a problem. The light bulb needs replacing. Pretty simple, correct? You don't get mad at the darkness. You don't curse the darkness. You don't rant about the darkness. You replace the light. The problem is the light is not working. That's why I've said for many years, I'm much more concerned with the absence of light, more concerned with the absence of light in our society than with the presence of darkness. Much more concerned about the quality and brightness of the light that is shining than with the intensity of the darkness. Therefore, I'm more concerned with a sleeping church than with a sinning society. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us today. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. And a little bit later in the broadcast, in the first hour, we are going to hear from a courageous 16-year-old woman who has made a clear statement against some of the pro-abortion culture in which she finds herself. In particular, reacting to Teen Vogue. So we're going to hear from her. We're going to talk with her later on the broadcast today. Listen to some of her quotes, and they're powerful. In the second hour, we're going to be speaking with author Jerry Newcomb about a new book, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ. But both guests have a common theme, which is we as believers must stand up to the culture and speak the truth. We as believers must stand up and do what's right. When the culture is going in the wrong direction, the only right choice you have to make is to swim against the tide of the culture. Let me say it again. When the culture is heading in the wrong direction, the only right choice is to swim against the tide of the culture, and that will put us in conflict with the culture at different points, in which case we rejoice because that is why we are here. All right, bunch of things going on, bunch of things I want to talk to you about. Let me throw out a couple of questions, though. Let me throw out these questions for you. I'm curious to get your feedback, and then a bunch of other news-related items I want to talk about, and then more about our role here in the world. I was on Twitter over the weekend, and I noticed one woman was responding to some of my tweets and saying, oh man, Dr. Brown, the world is so messed up. And then another tweet and yeah, you know, we just need to follow the Lord and follow his ways as Christians, something like that. And then another quote, man, this is just blank, blank, blank using profanity. This is just really bad stuff, except it didn't say stuff. And it prompted me to ask this question. Why is it that so many believers today, professing believers, professing to love the Lord and follow the Lord, why is it that so many of them use profanity so freely? Just a question. Oh, I've got some ideas, but I put that question out. Why is it that so many professing believers use profanity so freely? Are you seeing this? Are you experiencing it? 866-34-TRUTH. And then why is it, totally different question, that so many radical animal rights activists and environmentalists are so radically pro-abortion? Why do they want to hug a tree, save a baby whale, and not save a baby human? I wrote about that. In fact, it's my latest article. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
People are motivated. They're paying attention. They're angry. They want to be deployed. They don't just want to write you a check or write you a petition or send an email. They want to be engaged. They want you want to be protagonists with us. So we hear you. We open the doors to the church. And now come in. Let's do this together. We need you to be protagonists in this struggle.
Yes, that is the ACLU. They're launching a nationwide training program on protest and resistance. Obviously, they're going to be in opposition to the policies of President Trump. But here they staged in Coral Gables, Florida, a nationwide training event Saturday to make sure people are aware of their rights as protesters and urged organized public resistance by those opposed to policies of President Donald Trump. We will bring all the lawsuits necessary to defend these rights. We'll do the work in the courts. You do the work in the streets. People are motivated. They want to be engaged. Friends, let us not be asleep in the light as believers. Let us not be ignorant to what's happening in the world around us as believers. Let us not be asleep as protest movements increase and people take to the streets with their differences, often in ways that are more destructive than constructive, often in ways that are more about themselves than about the larger issues. Yes, there is frustration in lots of the society around us, but let's not downplay or minimize what's happening here. This is not the time for us to be passive or on the sidelines. No, I don't mean that we have to answer street protests with street protests, but let us get out of our comfort zone and let us speak up and let us stand up and let us speak out and let us stand out. Let us be different than the world in the way that we live, the compassion with which we live, the justice with which we live, the clarity with which we live, the courage with which we live, the compassion, I said compassion, but say conviction with which we live. Let us be different than the world around us. The world is getting activated and stirred. Let us be active in prayer. Let us be active in outreach. Let us be active in standing up and standing out and speaking up and speaking out. If you're waiting for a volatile moment in history where we can make a difference, that time is now. 866-348-7884. Now, you might say, boy, that question you asked about believers and profanity, it's a little random. Well, it is and it isn't. It is and it isn't. I raise it now on the air because it's symptomatic of the worldliness of the church. It's symptomatic of the fact that we do not walk adequately in the fear of the Lord and reverence for God and the beauty of holiness. It's relevant in that the world is changing the church more than the church is changing the world. I say that, friends, as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I say that as a reminder that we need to ask ourselves, our own moral standards, our own value system, the things that are important to us. Are we bringing about positive change through our influence, or are we being changed by the world? Let me share an illustration with you. Many years ago, before I was a believer, you know, I was a heavy drug user. And one particular day, a friend of mine was going to be hanging out. We were going to be hitchhiking to a friend's house about, 25-minute ride away. Neither of us drove at that point. He was willing to experiment with a hallucinogenic drug that he had never done before, and I, in my cruel sinfulness, decided to give him more than was a wise amount to do. Of course, I took my mega dose and then gave some to him, so he was pretty out of it as the day went on. Shameful idiot in terms of my behavior. Absolutely, that was me. Thank God for his saving mercy. So we ended up at this guy's house. We were hanging out. My friend was still having a hard time dealing with reality around him. He was kind of in a fog. we were hanging out with this friend, and he said, listen, we were spending the night there. He said, you got to go now. It was the middle of the night. We were, you know, couldn't start hitchhiking then late, you know, midnight or one in the morning. He said, my mother's boyfriend is coming in here. And if he finds you guys here, he's rough. He's going to hurt you. He said, so here's what you got to do. He said, I got a friend's house. It's a few blocks from here. He said, and he's got a tree house. Yeah, a tree house behind the house. We're going to sneak into the yard. And you guys are going to go up the ladder and stay in the treehouse, and then I'll come get you at dawn when my mother's boyfriend leaves. So we were just, okay, fine. What else are we going to do? He's got us petrified of the boyfriend that's going to come in there. You know, I mean, the way he described it, the guy's made of steel. He's going to rip us apart if he finds us. So we're in this little treehouse, just sitting there. We're both still high on drugs. There's nothing to do except just sit there. And we could see through the, you know, back of the house through a window, you could see a little TV was on or something. You could maybe watch a little of that, you know, from a dead. You couldn't really figure out what you're watching. But the problem was we were in close quarters. We were within a few feet of each other with this tiny little table between us. And my friend was sitting there rocking. I mean, picture it. He is rocking in a circle. His whole body is rocking in a circle. And I'm sitting there right with the guy for hours. And I stopped. I said, Ron, you got to stop, man. You got to stop. You're driving me crazy with sitting there and rocking like that. Just his whole body, because he was just out of it on drugs. He was just sat there and just went around in this kind of mini circle. And I said, man, just stop it. You're driving me crazy. Stop it. And he did. Thankfully, he did. And I don't know how we passed the rest of the time, but then the sun rose. And sure enough, this guy named Kevin, we hear him. He's coming up the ladder leading up to the treehouse, and he comes in there. And he goes, "What's with you guys? Both of you were sitting like this," and he starts rocking in this circular motion. My friend didn't stop rocking. I started rocking, and because I was rocking along with him, I didn't notice that he was still rocking. His issues that day became my issues, and I didn't even realize it. Friends, it's a ridiculous picture from my past. Yeah, ridiculous story from my past. But it illustrates the point that we can think, oh, we've changed. Oh, society's changed. All it is we've become more used to it. Here, I'll give you another example from before I was saved. Before I started getting high, I didn't know anybody in my high school got high. I heard about it, but I didn't know anyone in the high school that was getting high. And then I heard someone say that there's some people in the high school shooting heroin. I thought, shooting heroin in our school? We're like suburbs. Nobody that low, not in our school, couldn't be. I was outraged to hear it. Then I started getting high. Then I started buying drugs more than selling drugs. And I thought everybody in the school was getting high. It's like everybody I knew was doing drugs and buying drugs for me and this and that. I thought the whole school was getting high. Again, I was shooting heroin and I knew others that were. And then I got saved. I got wonderfully, gloriously, dramatically saved the end of 1971. Beautifully, gloriously saved. And a few months later, I said to one of my friends that had also gotten saved right before me, helped lead me to the Lord. We used to use drugs together. Now we were clean and free. And I said, you know, it looks like drug use in the school has really gone down dramatically. And he looked at me like, you crazy? What it was is I didn't hang out with those people anymore, so I wasn't aware of it anymore. I wasn't aware of what was going on because I wasn't part of it anymore. It's so easy for us to mistake what's happening in the world around us, to be misled with what's happening in the world around us, either because we become so like it, we become so immersed in it that we don't even recognize it. You know, it's like a cigarette smoker is not sensitive to being in a room filled with smoke. It's normal to them. But if you're not a cigarette smoker, you go in there, you're coughing, you come out, your clothes smell like smoke. You can't believe it. But the cigarette smoker is not even aware of it. Sometimes we become like that. We're in it so much. We're immersed in it so much. There's so much worldliness and compromise and sin around us. So many sexual images and so much violence and so much profanity and so much degrading of the image of God and human beings and on, we just get used to it. That is certainly one thing that happens. And another is we live so much in our Christian bubble that we have almost no contact with a sinning world. by all means, as far as sin, come out of the world. But as far as sinners, go into the world. Can I say that again? As far as sin, we come out of the world and we separate ourselves to do the will of God. As far as sinners, we go into the world to reach people with the gospel. So again, my biggest concern is not so much a sinning society. My biggest concern is a sleeping church. Right? We come back. I want to talk to you about what some are calling a Purim miracle, as we're in the end of the holiday of Purim. Some are calling this a modern-day Purim miracle. Trust me, if you're an Israeli or a Jew following the news, you got to put two and two together and think this is absolutely wild. We'll be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I should mention there was a tweet that I sent out also over the weekend. My friend Larry Tomczak had made a point, and it inspired me to tweet out, why is it a baby bump when you decide to have the baby, but a massive tissue bump if you decide to terminate the pregnancy? And I just had an HT hat tip to Larry Tomczak for getting me started on that thought. Well, about a day later, woman, self-described feminist, tweeted back, do you have a uterus? As if I'm not a woman, I can't comment on this. Of course, there are tons of pro-life women. Some of the most prominent leaders through the years are women. Many, 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 many female pro-life voices. So there are plenty of people with uteruses who are strongly pro-life. But the idea that unless you have a uterus, then you can't comment on this, of course, is utterly bogus. It'd be like saying if you're not a Jew, you can't have a moral issue with the Holocaust or something like that. In any case, I just tweeted back immediately, do you have a conscience? And somehow didn't get a response after that. Any surprise? No, not a surprise at all. Okay, before I get to some more social issues, including is it a surprise? Should we be surprised that President Trump has picked an openly gay same-sex, quote, marriage advocate for the NATO ambassador? Should that surprise us? Before I get to that, Israel is playing in the World Baseball Championship. This has teams from around the world. These are professional teams, professional players, right? It's not like the Olympics where you have to be a certain amateur status or in certain of the sports an amateur status. No, this is for everybody. And you have national teams and, of course, some of the powerhouse teams, Japan, and Cuba, and South Korea. Well, Israel has a team also. Israel, Israel's baseball team, right. Israel excels in many things, and per capita is amazing with inventions, with patents, with Nobel Prize winners, and all kinds of technological developments and on. But when you think of Israel, you don't think of Israel as a powerhouse in sports. Yes, great with national defense and things like that, but not a powerhouse in sports. Well, some are calling this the Purim miracle in the World Baseball Classic. Israel is the lowest ranked team in the whole group. All right, and everyone playing so far, they are the lowest ranked team. According to my friend Ron Cantor, writing from Israel, Israel is the lowest ranked team at the World Baseball Classic, 200-1 underdogs. They have been compared to the Jamaican bobsled team, of Olympic fame. And Ron says, as I am typing, they're in the ninth inning at 8:19 a.m. Sunday morning Israel time and are about to defeat baseball powerhouse Cuba. And they did. They did beat Cuba 4-1. So in the first round, they beat they're undefeated in the first round. Now they have a big game with the Netherlands, and if they beat the Netherlands, then they go on in the tournament. they have already beaten Korea, which was third ranked, Taiwan, which is fourth ranked, and Holland, which was ninth ranked. This is absolutely wild. When Ron says, when our sports minister was asked if she was going to South Korea where Israel is playing, she was clueless that the event was even taking place. And players and coaches read the Book of Esther for Purim before going out and beating Cuba. Yeah, there's a picture of it on Twitter. Nevertheless, to see sluggers wearing the kippah, the yarmulke, the head covering, and singing or at least listening, the Israeli national anthem is moving. In addition, according to Jewish tradition, the players read from the Book of Esther, known as the Megillah, from the dugout. Is that wild or what? We'll see which way it goes. But you, as a Jew, you see those things happening immediately. You wonder, another one of these Purim miracles. That wouldn't be like life-preserving miracle, but just one of those interesting things. Okay. Back to other issues. What is being called Trump Care? Paul Ryan's proposal to replace Obamacare. I don't know how to sort this out. I was no expert on the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's Affordable Care Act, which became known as Obamacare. I am no expert on what's happening with the Republicans now. All I can say is that I was expecting something more dramatically different, but we're going to have to bring some specialists on as this goes further. I'm just not the one to comment on it. So all I'm telling you is, of course, this is big in the news, but I'm not the one to comment on it. As for Russia. Ooh, JJ, grip number 9. This is Sean Spicer, press secretary Sean Spicer, who gets confronted. Well, where is that here? Yeah, he's going into a store. And he gets confronted by an Indian American. We'll play that for you in a second. But, no Obamacare or trumped up care. Hey, Howard, don't know. Don't know what to make of this. But everything I can tell is this whole Russia flap is just being blown out of proportion. And now Russia said, what are you talking about? Our folks met with the Hillary Clinton campaign many times. This is normal stuff that happens. Don't make any big deal out of it. But check out what happens to Sean Spicer. He gets confronted. Where is he? In Apple Stores in some store and gets confronted. Listen to what happens.
Have you helped with the Russia stuff? Are you a criminal as well? Have you committed treason too, just like the president?
Thank you.
Have you committed treason too? What can you tell me about Russia? You know you work for a fascist, right? You work for a fascist.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Palm Beach, right?
How do you feel about destroying our country, Sean? How do you feel about that? Do you feel good about the decisions you're making?
You
about lying to the American people? Do you feel good about lying to the American people?
Sorry to laugh. Poor guy. Whether you like him or not. He goes to an Apple store in Washington, D.C. And he gets confronted. She said that his reply to her question, such a great country that allows you to be here, was an implied threat to her citizenship. He gets accused of being a racist, working for a fascist. Where were all these people with press secretaries for President Obama when the Obama administration was putting its spin on the news, like every administration does, when the Obama administration was restricting the freedoms, well, let's just say was giving preference to certain news sites or liberal reporters, or President Obama was having a private meeting with liberal reporters. Where was the outrage over this? Look, I got no problem with people who have an issue with Donald Trump. Just use equal standards. And I've got no problem with people having issues with Barack Obama. Just use equal standards. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hello, my name is Autumn, and I'm 16 and would like to talk to you about an article recently posted by Teen Vogue called What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion. And since I'm a teen, this was directed towards me, and I would like to respond.
Ah, we are going to hear from this young woman momentarily, 866-348-7884. But let me say, this is what must happen. People must speak up and make their feelings known. And nowadays, with social media, with YouTube, nowadays, everybody must recognize they can have a voice. They can have a clear voice. And there's an open door to speak up and to speak out. We'll find out more about this article in a moment. But I want you to hear from this young woman, a pro-life teen. JJ, grab clip number 3. Again, we're going to speak not face-to-face, but live over the air momentarily. But let's listen more to what this young person has to say. This is Autumn. She's 16 years old. She's a sophomore in the Classical Conversations program. She competes at the national level in the National Christian Forensics and Communications Association for Speech and Debate. She's also a member of Students for Life of America and spends time with her local group working in the pro-life movement. Again, she is 16. Clip number 3.
Number 4, girl power hat. Is this really the time for that? I just ended my baby's life. Girl power. Are they insinuating that girls who celebrate their abortions understand girl power more than girls who regret them or refuse to have them? And by the way, how many aborted babies have been girls? What about their rights? When do girls begin to have power? And how powerful do you have to be to destroy the most helpless of people? To me, abortion seems like the opposite of girl power. It is the most invasive and degrading thing that could happen to a girl. And my version of girl power is knowing that I am valuable and precious. I am grateful I was allowed to live, and I want all girls and boys to have that same right. This is a human rights issue, not a girl power movement.
All right, again, 16-year-old Autumn. She's responding to an article in Teen Vogue, What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion. What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion. Yeah, this is in Teen Vogue, and she's speaking out. We got time for one more clip, clip number 4. Is this what you're going to get? This is how you're going to respond? Go ahead. Do we have
an abortion? Don't buy them a gag gift and disguise it as a celebration. Treat it for what it is, a terrible loss. Go sit with her in her grief. Pray for her. Remind her of God's redemption and comfort her in her suffering. Offer your friendship and promise to help her find healing. No matter what stance you have on abortion, it should never be treated with such nonchalance as this piece did. And if you are considering an abortion, remember, circumstances change. You won't always feel this afraid, and there are so many options and resources for you, such as adoption. My sister is adopted, and I cannot imagine my life without her. Her life is a gift to us. You have the power to choose life. And where there is life, there is always hope.
It turns out that that is what we're going to hear from Autumn today. There has been a communication mix-up, and she will not be able to join us. But I'm going to comment on this article myself. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, there was just apparently something that came up with the family that pulled Autumn away, and we may be able to get her on tomorrow. We'll see. But somehow we didn't get that memo. Just found out about it moments ago. So let me give a little more background. So Teen Vogue comes out with an article on what to get a friend post-abortion, okay? And they have a list of 10 different things, all right? What to get a friend post-abortion. Okay, one, all I want to do, cozy up with your heating pad, there'll be cramps, and download this heartwarming, hilarious, and dangerously fun, it'll be a very whitewashed 90s cult classic about the bad girls of Brixton Academy, and on and on and on. Okay, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll be proud to have a teenage girl, you'll definitely walk away touting Odette Sinclair's signature catchphrase, leave that out. So that's one thing, you get a friend post-abortion. Remember, this is Teen Vogue, and the pro-abortion movement is fighting back against the pro-life movement by getting more aggressively pro-abortion, hence the Shout Your Abortion movement that arose in the last couple of years. We'll skip that one. Number three, Milk and Honey by Rupi Kaur. This inspiring book of poetry tackles everything from heartache to shame, trauma to laughter, and all the myriad of other things that that life will throw in your path to. Number four, Angry Uterus Heating Pad by Lady Bits Design. Number five, Girl Power Cap. This is one of the things that Autumn was responding to. Girl Power Cap is based off my favorite tattoo and touts an important message that only the Spice Girls could deliver. So after the woman has the teenager aborts her baby. Remember, she's young, too young to do lots of other things, but can board a baby. Teen Vogue is for 13 to 19-year-olds. Get her a girl power cap. Oh, yeah. Number six, skip that one. Number seven, abortion clinic escort sign up. Now that you know all the ways to get through this ordeal, why don't you make it a little easier for the next girl and sign up to be an abortion clinic escort? This is what kids are being exposed to. Oh, okay, listen. Many years ago, how can I say this in a way that I can say it? Oh, okay. We knew somebody who knew somebody. Put it like that. We knew somebody who knew somebody. The teenage daughter was growing up, and we happened to notice that she was suddenly becoming very worldly in her appearance, things like that. Okay? So you say a friend of a friend of a friend, however you want to say it, all right? Just as she was, you know, starting to grow as a young woman, teenager, she started to get very, very worldly. And we remember talking to folks that knew the girl, because it wasn't our place to do it. And, you know, she subscribed to, like, the Glamour magazines and the different things. And we just talked to the folks that knew her and said, you know, you might just want to be careful about what she's taking in because, you know, it's having this very worldly effect. And, no, it's nothing. She keeps getting more worldly, keeps getting more sensual, keeps taking more clothes off, ends up being a stripper. No, I'm not saying that every girl that reads Glamour magazine is going to become a stripper. No, I'm just saying that kids are bombarded with a lot of trash, all right? Teen Vogue, 13 to 19-year-olds. And this is the trash that's coming their way. I'm looking at an email with 63 stories promoting abortion, Teen Vogue stories in 2017. Is that right? Yeah, I can everyone say out loud with me together, yikes? 2017, we're only in the middle of March. We're only in the middle, it's March 13th. And as of February 17th, look at this. LifeSite News has this article. 63 Teen Vogue stories promoting abortion in 2017. And also promoting LGBT issues. Federal judge issues injunction blocking Obamacare protections of transgender people. It's January 2nd. This is what kids are getting bombarded with. And trust me, unless they're really being raised in a godly environment, they're more influenced by this than the Bible that they don't read. Let's see. What else do you get for a girl, teen, that just had an abortion? We won't go back. Needlepoint. Give your downtrodden boo this protest needlepoint to remind her of all the women who came before us, of all the women who have marched for you, and of all those who fought to give her this choice, the choice to teenager to terminate the life of a baby in the womb. 9, RBG coloring book by She Knows. It's free. It pays homage to the biggest champion for our rights, the one and only notorious RBG, our second ever female Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Number 10, Love You Chocolate Box. Let your best babe know how much you love her in the sweetest way possible. Oh, reach out. Reach out to a teen friend that had an abortion. Absolutely. And they may be hurting enough already. The last thing they're going to need is someone to hit them over the head with a Bible. But don't congratulate them on their great choice and send them some gift to encourage their the choice they made and those that have paved the way for them to terminate the lives of babies in the womb by the tens of millions. No, find a way to speak the truth in love. Find a way to say what you've done is terribly wrong, but there is a better way. There is hope and forgiveness in Jesus. And this, too, can be forgiven, and there can be redemption. So, have you heard of Students for Life? They're formed in the 1970s. Under a different name, Students for Life will create a culture where those most affected by abortion are empowered and equipped to recruit their peers to join our human rights movement, save lives on the front lines, lead local and national initiatives, and provide tangible resources while supporting those facing an unplanned pregnancy. And regarding 16-year-old Autumn, Bob Unruh wrote about her a couple weeks back on WorldNet Daily. Autumn, a 16-year-old girl who recently released a video commentary on abortion, is eloquent, direct, unafraid, involved, informed, and smart. She is, as the activist organization Students for Life said, Planned Parenthood's worst nightmare. Students for Life explains Autumn is in high school. She's passionately pro-life. She is what the next generation looks like on the issue of abortion, and the abortion industry is going to have real problems facing that down. The organization continued, if we were Planned Parenthood, we'd be terrified of Autumn and the pro-life generation she represents. An educated, articulate, and passionate one, a generation that cares deeply about human rights and the equality of all people, which extends to the preborn, a generation that has successfully incorporated the mission to help women facing unplanned pregnancies into mainstream pro-life movement, a generation that is truly fearless in the face of Planned Parenthood and their allies. Yep. So this is, friends, what we must do. We must stand and we must speak. We must make our voices heard. Young people, you can make a difference. Older people, you can make a difference. Singles, you can make a difference. Married couples, you can make a difference. Our friends, David and Jason Benham, founded Cities for Life. And if you just go to Cities for Life, if you check out what they've done, it's a template, and you can do it in your city. It's based, Cities for Life, Cities the number 4, citiesforlife.org. Last year, as these different groups worked together, they have seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mothers decide to keep their babies or give their babies up for adoption. Again, what happens in the city of Charlotte can happen in other parts of the country as well. Why not speak up? Why not stand up? Yes, we have lots of weaknesses with our president. Yes, there are lots of things we wish he would grow into and be different and do differently. At the same time, he is taking a strong pro-life stand. It's a great time for us to now come together with our grassroots movement, with our grassroots prayer, with our grassroots activism, and to make a difference and to turn the tide once and for all with abortion in America. We come back. I want to address that interesting issue, the interesting issue of why. Why is it that the most radical animal rights activists and environmental activists are often the most hostile when it comes to the pro-life movement? We'll cover that when we come back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, friends, we are putting out a lot of really helpful material here. And I can't tell you how many times someone sends me an article or texts me or sends me a note. Mike, have you seen this? Dr. Brown, are you aware of this? And they're all upset. And I said, actually, we commented it. I wrote an article on it yesterday. Actually, we put out a video on it 2 days ago. Oh, that was the subject of the radio show earlier in the week. And folks are like, wow, I didn't know that. How can I keep up with things? Well, the easiest thing is to get our newsletter. Get my weekly newsletter. And this way, the end of every week, you'll get a list with a summary of every article that I put out, of every video that I put out, all in one place, all there for your convenience. Also, if you connect with us on either Facebook or Twitter, the moment we have a new article or a new YouTube video, you'll be informed. And this way you can read the article, you can watch it, you can share it with others. In fact, have you seen my latest videos? There are a few of them. They're all up on our digital library at AskDrBrown.org. How far does submission to our spiritual leaders go? How far does submission to our spiritual leaders go? That's a good question, isn't it? How about this? When should a Christian be disfellowshipped? Yeah, that's got a lot of discussion. And then one that's created a stir and more passion on this than I expected is 666 hidden in the Disney logo. Ooh. Yeah, that video. And why are the millennials protesting? And I'm hearing from a good number of millennials who say, man, you nailed it. You're exactly right there. So, of course, you can go to the website, thelineoffire.org or askdrbrown.org, click on the digital library, and you can see our latest videos, read the latest articles as well. But I want to encourage you to sign up for the newsletter. So just take a moment, go to thelineoffire.org. You'll see sign up for the newsletter. Take you just a few seconds to do it. And then beginning of every week, we also have a special resource offer, sometimes greatly discounted resources or other things that we're making available to you. And then if there are some testimonies, we may share those with you during the week as well. So make sure you're in contact with us in that way. And then this month, all right, this month only, we've never done this before, but in conjunction with my Israel trip and a lot of Jewish ministry we're doing this month, when you become a torchbearer, when you become a torchbearer, so you put aside a dollar or more per day, $30 or more per month, when you join our great faithful support team, we're sending you a special Jewish ministry package, a resource package. We've never done this before. A hardcover edition of The Real Kosher Jesus. We have these are truly limited in number. A hardcover edition of The Real Kosher Jesus, my number one book to give to a seeking Jew. My number one book to give to a Christian who wants to find out who Jesus really is, and a DVD episode called Jesus Can't Be the Messiah, where I address these things head on for a Jewish audience on location, and then an audio CD with highlights, special highlights from our Israel tour, the radio shows we did from Israel. So take advantage of this. This way we're sowing back into you. Every month we send you a new audio message. Every month an insider prayer, an update, and testimony newsletter. And you get free access to online classes we have. And You also get a 15% discount in our online bookstore. So many, many benefits for you as we partner together for the salvation of Israel, as we partner together for the gospel to go to the nations, as we partner together to see moral and cultural revolution. Folks sometimes wonder, hey, you're doing a lot. You have a small team. You're doing a lot. You're a voice in our culture. You're traveling to the nations. You're reaching the Jewish people with the gospel. It's a team effort, friends. You, our torchbearers, are the nucleus of our support, and you enable us to do so much of what we do. So thank you for standing with us. Give yourself a hand and a pat on the back. And others, join our team today. You can do it all at thelineoffire.org. Okay, so why is it that often the most radical animal rights activists, environmental activists, are also strongly pro-abortion? In my article, my latest article, Personhood Rights for Needy Chimps But Not Baby Humans, I raised that question. What reminded me of it was over the weekend, I was reading a column about an animal rights lawyer, Steve Wise, who will argue, I guess he did today maybe, that chimpanzees should have personhood rights. He's going to argue that in front of the Manhattan Appellate Division of New York's Supreme Court. And he said a person is the law's way of saying that entity has the capacity for rights. A thing, which chimpanzees are now, don't have capacity for any kind of rights. To treat them as things destroys them. Now, I don't know anything about this individual. I don't know anything about him. He may be pro-life. I don't know. His group is called the Non-Human Rights Project. But if my past experience is correct, the more radical the animal rights activists, the more pro-abortion they are. In other words, if I'm right, and whether he is pro-life or not doesn't change the larger story, there is a personhood bill Republicans have put forward, which provides, quote, that human life shall be deemed to begin with fertilization. And this personhood bill would effectively say that abortion is illegal because the baby in the womb is person at fertilization. And it wouldn't surprise me that someone arguing for the personhood of a chimp is also passionately opposed to the personhood bill. You say, why would that be? Why would that be the case? Again, I don't know about this particular lawyer, where he stands. I do know it with others. I've tracked it. I've watched it with interest. And the PETA-type groups and the extreme environmental activists, why is it? Now look, I believe as followers of Jesus, we should be compassionate. I believe as followers of Jesus, we should stand for justice. I believe as followers of Jesus, we should be good stewards. So I'm all for protecting the environment, and I'm all for working against animal cruelty and things like that. At the same time, here's where we'd have the big difference with some of these other extremists. They do not recognize a creator God, and they do not recognize as human beings created uniquely in the image of God. Because of which, number one, they do not recognize the value of human life beginning in the womb. They would put us on a par in certain ways with animals, and we're not. So they do not recognize that we're created in the image of God. Many of these people would be for euthanasia. Hey, you know, a horse gets injured, you put the horse down, a human gets in pain, put the human down. Because they don't make that distinction. And therefore, they could fight for, you know, to save eagle eggs, but not baby humans. And then, because they don't recognize that God has given us this earth, yes, we should be good stewards, but he's given us this earth. And yes, he's given the animal creation to us as well, that for example, to eat meat is not something contrary to God's plan at this time in the world. So that's where they fundamentally mess up. And again, that's where our culture needs to recognize God first and central. Many years ago, some folks from Greenpeace came to the neighborhood where I lived, knocked on the door of one of my good friends, and said they were raising money to save the baby whales. And he said, I'm more concerned with saving the baby humans. And they left in a huff. Any surprise? Nope. All right, friends, make sure you sign up for our newsletter and join our support team at thelineoffire.org. Together, we're making a difference. Living as lights in the midst of this dark, messed up world. How do we do it? How far do we go? How far do we push back?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, note to self. Note to each one listening. Complaining doesn't do any good. Complaining doesn't change things. Complaining just magnifies what's wrong. The world around us is messed up, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Culture is messed up, no doubt about it. But each of us can make a difference. If we move from complaining, bad-mouthing, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and this is not fair, and that's not fair, and instead say, okay, Lord, here I am. What can I do to make a difference? Here I am. What can I do to bring about change? 866-348-7884 is the number to call. So I'll give you an example. Case in point. A Harvard Library, as reported by T. Beckett Adams on March 11th on the Washington Examiner. Harvard Library is circulating a fake news list, which, of course, includes just about every conservative news site. Adams writes, a few conservative critics predicted early on that the recent obsession with fake news would lead eventually to right-of-center newsrooms being lumped with the bad actors. It looks increasingly like those critics were onto something. Harvard University's library website currently features a page titled Fake News, Misinformation, and Propaganda. Did you get that? Fake news, misinformation, and propaganda. The page URL even has the word fake in it. And what's listed as false and misleading? What's listed as fake news? The Washington Free Beacon, Independent Journal Review, The Daily Caller, and The Washington Examiner are all on the list, each tagged with derogatory labels, including clickbait, bias, unreliable, political, or a combination of the four. The list also includes conservative commentary sites like The Blaze, Red State, and The Weekly Standard. Fox News is not included in the database. Legacy media organizations, including The Washington Post and New York Times, are also excluded from the list, despite that they've bungled several recent Trump-related, quote, scoops. And it goes on. Online database linked by Harvard's library features a handful of well-known left-leaning news sites, including Raw Story and Think Progress. However, several notable left-of-center newsrooms, including Mother Jones, Vox.com, Media Matters, and Huffington Post, are conspicuously absent, and on it goes. Okay, there's further data in the Harvard Library commenting on this, Merrimack College Assistant Professor Melissa Zimdars, who helped compile this, says it's being misrepresented by the press and others. Of course, Washington Examiner challenges that. I bring that up to say this is a perfect example of what appears to be something wrong, something unjust, something misleading, something propagandistic in the name of exposing propaganda. So it's good that Adams exposes this and addresses it on the website that he is writing for in the Washington Examiner. What we must do is get truth out. It's a simple task. Get the truth out and dispel the lies. Get the truth out. Let the light shine, and that will dispel the darkness. Don't bellyache about how wrong things are. Don't complain about how wrong things are. Address what's right and do what's right, and we can and will bring about change. It's not so hard, is it? It can be frustrating. It can be challenging. You can do it.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, an update on an earlier news story, people talking about a Purim miracle in Israel winning four games. They were 200-1 underdog in the World Baseball Classic in South Korea, winning four games, beating Taiwan, beating Cuba, beating the Netherlands, beating Korea, I think, as well. So the big game, though, was against the Netherlands now to see who would go on into the next round. And I didn't realize they were playing today, and it is still Purim. So much for the Purim miracle. Israel lost 12-2 to the Netherlands today. Yeah. So much for the Purim miracle. Hey, it was good while it lasted, right? It was good while it lasted. Congratulations to Israel anyway. Congratulations to the Netherlands for moving on. But whatever happened, now they're both, well, 7-1-1. Are they eliminated? I'm not sure. Maybe the story's not over. I thought this was the deciding game. But on the other hand, Tim Tebow got his first hit in spring training with the Mets. Yeah. Got his first hit. What do you know? 866-34-TRUTH. So let's look at how skewed things are on our college campuses. We're going to talk some about education tomorrow. Let's take a look at how skewed the thinking of young people is, how twisted things are. And then rather than complain, say, okay, we got our work cut out. We've got to do something about this. And we're going to go to the University of West Madison? Okay. Got all the quotes in front of me. All right. Clip number six. These are students on the university, and they're asking questions. Okay, so there's a dress designer who opted out of designing dresses for Melania Trump. Is that okay? Is that acceptable? And they were talking about an ordinance about discrimination and religious discrimination, things like that. So they're going to be asked a few questions. So here's the first one. There was a dress designer that opted out of designing dresses for Melania Trump. Is that okay? Is that acceptable? Does that violate the discrimination ordinance? Clip number six.
Do you think that she has the right to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Do you think it's okay for her to do that?
Yeah.
You should be able to control your business in that regard, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess that's that company's choice, right? I mean, it's a free market. That's what most conservatives want anyway, so.
Do you think that she has the right to do that?
The dress designer? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you have the right to opt out of business that you might not want to associate yourself with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And by the way, of course, University of Wisconsin in Madison. All right, so... Yeah, I agree with them. Dress designer does not want to design dresses for Melania Trump. That's her business. If it hurts her business, helps her business, that's her business. But she has the right to say, I don't want to. Just like a designer would have had the right to say, I'm not going to design dresses for Michelle Obama. They didn't like the president's policies. They think, well, I'm not going to design. It's fine. It's your prerogative. You help yourself, you hurt yourself, you deal with public opinion, but that's your prerogative. Your company, operate accordingly. All right, so now a question comes up. Say for someone who's a Muslim, all right, Muslim singer, this is clip number seven. What about a case like this?
So if you were, let's say, a Muslim singer here in Madison and a church approached you for an Easter service for you to sing, do you have the right to opt out of that?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you have the right to opt out of doing whatever you want.
Yeah, if that goes against your religious views, I feel like you have the right to turn that down.
Okay. So there's actually a city ordinance that would allow those groups to sue you by opting out, by turning down their request. Do you think that's a good law?
Probably not.
Do you think that's an okay law?
I don't believe so, no. No, not at all. I feel like that goes against people's rights.
So pretty much, do you think that a law should exist that would force somebody to do the work?
Absolutely not.
All right. Agree. Absolutely. What, you're going to say you can sue a Muslim if the Muslim wouldn't sing at a Christmas or an Easter service? You're going to sue the Muslim? Are you kidding me? And there's an ordinance that would supposedly back that? What kind of nonsense is that? So these students, yeah, they're right. And this goes back, this I think was 2015. This is microaggressions. Okay, that's another story. Got confused. All right, clip number 8. So now, Christian photographer in Madison, same thing. Christian photographer, and their approach, someone wants them to do a same-sex wedding. Now, remember they've said, design dresses for Melania? No. Just, they don't want to do it. They don't have to do it. Can't force them to do it. Nothing wrong with that. Muslim singer asked to sing at a Christmas event, an Easter event, some Christian event of some kind. No, you don't sue them. You shouldn't be able to sue them for refusing. Of course not. Obviously. Religious rights, freedoms, you can't impose that on others. Obviously. All right, clip number 8.
So let's say you're a Christian photographer here in Madison.
Yeah.
And someone approached you to do a same-sex wedding. Would that be hateful or discriminatory to opt out of that?
I don't know.
Do you have the right to do that?
In that situation, probably not, because that would bring up some legal issues, I would suspect.
Like that city ordinance, right?
Yes, yeah.
The one that you didn't agree with?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was switched to, like, Christian views or something, they wouldn't be able to do that. And also, I don't know, I just think it should be, like, fair all around.
I think it's very difficult to determine what reason it is that you make that decision, unless you're very steadfast in your religion saying, no, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. In which case, that's, yeah, you're a jerk for doing that.
That's such a sticky issue.
Sticky issue. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? It's not a sticky issue for a Muslim. They could ask the same question about a Muslim with a same-sex wedding. What if that Muslim was asked to photograph a same-sex wedding and said, no, I can't because of my religious beliefs? That's not sticky. That's not sticky. But when it's a Christian, it's sticky. And not only so, the idea that, okay, offending Melania Trump, saying we're not going to do business with the Trumps, your prerogative. All right. Saying that you can't ask someone from one religion to participate in another religious event, no problem. But when it comes to same-sex issues, everybody must bow down to that. Everybody must bow down to that. You cannot offend. No, no, no. So where does that leave us? Here's where it leaves us. You ready? It leaves us with a society that is messed up. It leaves us with a society that is twisted in its thinking. It leaves us with a society that has exalted LGBT, quote, rights over freedom of speech, conscience, and religion, just as many have warned for years, I being one of those many who has warned. So I am not going to say here, I told you so, I told you this was coming. I'm going to say, I told you that this was coming, and now if you don't believe me, it's a little late to get in the game. So better to recognize what's happening and act on it. You say, how do I act on it? Wherever you find yourself in society, whether you're a parent, whether you're an educator, whether you're just working your job, whether you're someone posting on Facebook, whether you're a kid going to high school, whoever you are, take your stand. Whoever you are, expose hypocrisy. Whoever you are, expose darkness. Whoever you are, shine light. Whatever you can do, speak truth. There are enough of us that if we do it, the tide will turn, especially if we do the one thing that's the greatest thing we could do of all, which is pray. And not pray like the sky is falling, but pray like we have a God who sits enthroned. We have a God who rules and reigns as king. We have a Savior to whom all authority in heaven and earth is given. Therefore, we stand and we speak. Therefore, we're not ashamed. Therefore, we're not afraid. Therefore, we are bold. And we know that ultimately that the greatest harm anyone could do to us is only to promote us into God's heavenly kingdom. Therefore, we don't fear human opinion or consequences like that because we love the Lord. And we're not here to take life. We're here to give life. We're here to bring life. We are pro-life in every sense of the word, but our lives are given over to do the will of God, regardless of cost or consequence. Yeah, things are messed up. You're going to hear tomorrow they're even more messed up than we realize. But we are here to be agents of change. That's why I'm on the radio. That's why I write, speak. We are here to be agents of change. Can I count you in? Are you part of the team?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. In a few minutes, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and we are going to talk about his new book, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ. I've been looking through the manuscript. It's got incredible endorsements and got some great, great stuff. So we're going to be talking to Dr. Jerry Newcomb shortly. All right. President Trump. Of course, the nation continues to be tremendously divided over President Trump. I think he's done a tremendous amount of good. And there are other areas where I have concerns. And I'm not alone in feeling that way. Now, in point of fact, there are things he's doing that are important and that are right. Say in the pro-life movement, say in the nominating of Judge Neil Gorsuch, in various other stances he's taken. He's definitely taken steps in the right direction and is staying with his campaign pledge, and I believe has become pro-life, his view has changed over the years. I believe that. At the same time, we've seen that he is not strong on gay issues, on LGBT issues. On the one hand, the Department of Justice reversed the ridiculous transgender activism of the previous administration, put into practice the last year of President Obama's presidency. On the other hand, the fact that he had an openly gay friend speak as an openly gay man at the Republican National Convention, and now, as Peter LaBarbera reports on LifeSite News, President Trump has chosen open homosexual and, quote, gay Christian advocate Rick Grenell to be the U.S. ambassador to NATO. According to several news reports, the appointment not yet confirmed by the White House would make Grenell the highest-ranking open homosexual serving in the Trump administration. Grenell, 50, is a Republican foreign policy expert, former spokesman for three U.S. ambassadors to the United Nations from 2001 to 2008, and a Fox News contributor. So a lot of things, I'm sure, going for him that are positive, but he's also a gay advocate. As LifeSite News reported, after he was floated for ambassador to the U.N., a job that eventually went to South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Grenell advocates for homosexual, quote, marriage as a conservative issue. He criticizes loud religious rights activists who oppose homosexuality and touts Trump's uniquely pro-LGBT credentials as Republican. He was an early Trump supporter. On LGBT issues, Trump has disappointed social conservatives by a series of actions that include reinstating an Obama executive order, forcing contractors to have pro-LGBTQ policies, etc. So, again, mixed signals. A February 3rd podcast with Fox News reporter Shannon Bream, he said, "I am gay, I am a Christian, and I am still a man of faith." He said, "I know I was born this way." So, once again, you have something mixed coming from the president. Why do I raise that? Why do I mention it? I mention it because we cannot look to him to do what the church must do. we cannot look to him to bring about the changes that we know that we need to bring about. We cannot look to him to be anything other than the president. And we pray for him to do what's right. We pray for him to listen to godly counsel that's around him. And we recognize at the same time that he is a man with clay feet. He is a man with clay feet. He is a man with mixed convictions, and that he still has either a blind spot when it comes to this, when it comes to LGBT issues. He either has a blind spot, or he has a very different view of these things, or he still has not worked out what to do when the conflict arises between, quote, gay rights and religious rights. Here's my hope, and I've done my best to communicate this to people close to the president and to Vice President Pence. He is going to have to realize sooner or later that the conflict will come. He must plant himself firmly on the side of religious rights, which will ultimately be for the best interest of America. And according to our history, the only possible way to go on these issues. And he's got to realize that unless he absolutely comes against fundamental Christian rights, unless he ultimately comes against our freedom of conscience, our freedom of speech, our freedom of religion, gay activists will not be happy. Unless he adapts the radical transgender activism of President Obama, unless he pushes the way President Obama was pushing these things, and maybe even more, he will not satisfy gay activists. And I'm hoping that at a certain point he realizes that. I'm hoping that at a certain point he understands that nothing is ever enough in that respect, in which case he can wake up to the point that we have been making, that those who came out of the closet will not be satisfied until we go in the closet. So what's the simple lesson for us? We're not going in the closet. What's the simple application? We are going to present our case even more clearly. We're going to present our case for marriage, our case for family, our case for life beginning in the womb. We're going to present our case for how to raise kids and how to be married. And we're going to have to get our own act in order to do it better. In my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, I just got my copy of it last week. The Korean edition of it came out in the fall of 2015 in the States and just translated into Korean in conjunction with a major conference that just took place there, a major national conference on these issues. One of the points I make is that if we will live out God's principles for marriage, for family, if we will celebrate gender distinctions as intended by God, if we will speak the truth in the midst of lies, if we will determine to write the last chapter of the book, in other words, we're not throwing in the towel, or in the spirit of the book of Esther, Mordecai is not bowing down, then we will see change come. Why? Because God's ways are best. Because God's ways are ways of life. And the more I focus on me, the less healthy I'll be. The more I focus on God, the healthier I'll be. The more I focus on what's important to Him in the service of others, the more enriched my life will be. The more I focus on what I want, what I need, and what I have to have, the worse it's going to be for everybody around me. And the worse it's going to be for me as well. Oh, it may not be like that immediately, but inevitably, that will happen. And if we will give ourselves to a culture of life, which is pro-life, not pro-abortion, a culture of marriage, a culture of family, celebrates and honors singles and the contribution of singles, but recognizes God's ultimate intent is for marriage and family and reproduction and nurturing, and that is the environment in which culture thrives, if we give ourselves to that and live by those principles, will outlast other revolutions, the abortion revolution, the gay revolution, and more people will find life and hope and transformation. We'll be right back with Dr. Jerry Newcomb.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on the Line of Fire. My guest, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, has written a new book, Unstoppable, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ. Jerry's been on with me before. He serves as the senior producer and is on-air host and a columnist for D. James Kennedy Ministries. He's produced or co-produced more than 60 one-hour television specials that have aired nationwide, the author or co-author of 28 books. And I got a copy over the weekend of his newest book, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ. It's got great praise from many, David Limbaugh and William Federer and Matt Staver and quite a few others. And immediately I was drawn into the book. So I thought, we've got to get Jerry on to talk about this. This is how we live. This is what our attitude should be as believers in this day and age in our culture. Jerry, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's great to be on with you again.
Jerry, you start the book, I thought it was a typo, about the unstoppable Jesus Christ. And then I said, you meant unstoppable. What prompted you to write that chapter? What's the event that sparked it?
Well, as a matter of fact, it was the initial working title of the whole book was The Unstoppable Jesus Christ. What happened specifically, a few years ago, people might remember there was a college, it happened to be in our area here in South Florida, where a professor actually asked the students in a sociology-type class, take out a sheet of paper, write the name Jesus on that sheet of paper, put it on the ground, now go ahead and stomp on that sheet of paper. That was an exercise. And this one Mormon student, God bless him, we don't agree with Mormons on doctrine, but this boy had courage, and I appreciate what he did. He, number one, he refused to do it, and then number two, he let people know what was happening in this particular class afterwards. And initially, the school supported the professor and academic freedom and so forth. Then later, as the whole world heard about it, you know, so to speak, they realized, no, this is kind of dumb. You know, what was the point? And as I wrote a column about it at the time called The Unstoppable Jesus Christ, one of the points I made in the column is, could you imagine if that professor had said, okay, now write the name Muhammad,
yeah,
or write the name Allah on a sheet of paper. Now put it on the ground and go ahead and stomp on it. And they shouldn't, by the way. I mean, it's a stupid assignment. I don't even understand what they were thinking in the first place, but that's kind of the way it is in America. But I used that opportunity to say, hey, look, let's look at the big picture here, folks. In the big picture, Jesus Christ is predestined to win. And then I gave example after example, and if I may, one of my favorites comes from William F. Buckley Jr.,
yeah,
who one time he was asked to, not to moderate a debate, but just give some opening remarks at a debate between a Christian scholar of the Bible, and specifically the Gospels and Jesus, and a liberal, essentially anti-Christian scholar of the same. And so anyway, Bill Buckley said, if during the course of this debate the skeptic disappears in a puff of smoke right up there on stage, then rest assured, Jesus up in heaven has just cleared his throat. Mm. And I thought, you know, wow, what a statement. You know, but it's true. I mean, I give another example. I said that, look at how in the slavery, this evil institution in America, and while the plantations that had this systemic evil of slavery, those are long gone with the wind. And yet, there were songs of praises born on those plantations from the slaves themselves, as in initially called Negro spirituals, now American spirituals. And those are still with us. Were you there when they crucified our Lord? You know, that's still sung in hymns. Jesus
Amazing.
Will last forever.
Amazing. All right, we'll be right back with Dr. Jerry Newcomb. His new book, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ, How Your Faith Can Triumph in a World Gone Mad. Do we still believe it, that our faith can triumph?
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today. I'm speaking with Dr. Jerry Newcomb. His new book, The Unstoppable Jesus Christ, How Your Faith Can Triumph in a World Gone Mad. Jerry, let me play the pessimist advocate for a moment. You know me well enough to know that's not my real heart or mindset, but you were there in the heyday of Coral Ridge Ministries with D. James Kennedy. You were there to see evangelism explosion. You were there to see rise of the moral majority, or at least you've intersected with some of these things. There was a sense in time past of a momentum, of positive change, of America shifting, but it seems that things are hell-bent in the opposite direction now. Why should we be so confident when it seems like everything is going against our beliefs and convictions these days?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, I think there's progress and then there's regress. A lot of times when you think about the kingdom of God on earth in terms of the advancement of the Christian gospel, much of it is happening in other places and other countries. But in America, I think there's still a lot of things that are happening even under the radar. And certainly the high places, I think, if to use that phrase, I don't mean it in the biblical sense, but I mean the major areas of our culture or whatever, the stronghold. Certainly the enemy seems to have a stronghold on all these different areas. And you're right, it does seem discouraging. And yet, despite it all that, there's still some positive signs, that the Lord is at working. If in nothing else, in the hearts of individuals. If you looked, for example, at, let's say, the Christians at the time Jesus left this earth, there was, 120 people, right, when he ascended into heaven. There were 120 before Pentecost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were 11 disciples, down from 12. They had already lost one, Judas, who betrayed the Lord. And then you project that, 5 years later, 10 years later, you see progress, but you also see regress. Then you see, jumping ahead about 20 or 30 years later, you see incredible persecution, and already Christianity is starting to be mentioned primarily in historical ways, but primarily because of the anti-Christian persecution taking place against the Christians. And yet that's a way in which historians today can verify, oh my goodness, look at the explosive growth of the church. And then you jump forward about 200 or 300 years, well, obviously 300 years later, you have a Christian Caesar finally, or at least a Caesar who claims to be a Christian in the person of Constantine, and makes it legal. I mean, the early Christians could never have imagined that. So there's always this kind of progress and regress and progress and regress. Then you jump ahead, let's say, in the second quadrant of the four quadrants since the coming of Christ to the present time. In other words, 500 units each.
Okay.
In that second quadrant, Kenneth Scott Latourette, the great Yale historian of church history, he was a Christian, and he died, about 50 years ago. But anyway, he said, man, if you were looking at that second quadrant when Islam arose, you would almost think that Islam was the future and not Christianity. But eventually, the church, overcame Islam. And even now, some people are saying, oh, Islam is destined to become the most popular religion in the whole world. I don't know if you saw that report recently. In fact, I was asking Robert Spencer about that on my own radio show.
Yep.
And he said, well, first of all, when you can have polygamy and you can have 36 children, how does the average Christian family compete with that? They're winning in the bedroom, for one thing. But that factor doesn't take, or those statistics don't take into consideration other things, such as, the fact that there are ways in which God is at work, let's say even in the Muslim world, that most people don't hear about, like the dreams and visions of Jesus, son of Mary, Isa ben Miriam. I mean, this is reported so widely. They say that in Indonesia, they're not even doing census reports anymore of religion, because that nation is the largest Muslim nation in the world, and yet so many people apparently have become Christians out of a Muslim background in Indonesia that it's embarrassing to them.
Yeah.
And so there are ways in which Jesus is at work. We just don't happen to see it, you know, because it's not up front and center. We tend to see a lot of the bad stuff.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to point this out, Jerry, and I commend you for doing it. In fact, I just was at a conference where a couple was speaking, and they work with persecuted Christians in the Muslim world, and they're talking about the phenomenal growth of the church in Syria, of all places.
Oh, my goodness.
Syria. Yeah,
wow.
And then, of course, one of the places where the gospel is spreading most powerfully is Iran, in the midst of Muslim oppression there. Yeah.
So that is amazing.
Yeah, so in point of fact, God is at work. And yeah, we have reason to be concerned when we see evil in the world, or where we see the rise of radical Islam or things like that, or where we see Christians losing their values. But the whole idea of, you know, throw our hands up and panic and, oh, no, and I just tweeted out, we shouldn't pray as if the sky was falling, but as if there's a great God enthroned in heaven. And that's
Amen.
That's part of what you seek to get across in this book. So the first part of the book, part one, Jesus Christ. And you go through history, you go through his death and his resurrection, and you exalt Jesus, and now begin to move into aspects of culture. So Hollywood and the media, what do you take up now in the second part of the unstoppable Jesus Christ?
Well, just different. You realize, of course, this book is essentially several of my columns put together. And so I put together the ones about Hollywood and the media and their various ones, but overall they show that most American audiences really prefer moral and even Christian themes in the movies. And Ted Baer has actually documented that in his publications on Movie Guide. And then I talked about some attempts to even possibly slander in the movies, George Washington in one example, Jesus Christ in another example. And so I just show that threat exists. But in the meantime, most people, even normal people, want good and moral fare. Then I even had a column on, is Scripture quoting a sign that you're nuts? Because a lot of times it seems like if you see somebody on TV or in the movies and they're quoting Scripture, this is a crazy person. But, in contrast to that, I knew a guy that quoted Scripture all his life, and he was the most wonderful person you could ever meet. And thankfully, the Hollywood stereotypes are not true.
So it's so interesting. On the one hand, America is bombarded by so much pollution from the media, the young people bombarded with such an assault on often the family's values, the schools hitting so hard on this. And yet you have many people who say, we don't like all this, the sexual stuff. We don't like all the violence. We don't like, you know, the breaking down of gender distinctions and things like that. There's something that God's put within us, and there's something still of the gospel in our society that is pushing back.
I totally agree. And that's part of the whole point of this book, is to kind of bolster people with good news based on facts. I mean, so for example, I have an article in here on the alternative media. Well, Dr. Brown, you're part of that alternative media in a very major way. And I strive to be part of that alternative media. And it's a real lifeline. And in fact, I give some extreme examples, but from the Nazi era, especially in Norway, where my wife is from, and her relatives think I'm nuts, but I'm always interested when we go and visit her family, and I learn more stuff about when the Nazis took over that country in 5 years, 1940 to 1945, and all the ways the Norwegians provided resistance to the Nazis is very encouraging. And to me, it's the alternative media is like that resistance movement in Norway, and it's providing the truth, you know, in an age where there's so much false propaganda going around.
Interesting. And Jerry, what else can folks find in The Unstoppable Jesus Christ? What other headings do you have?
Well, there's a whole section on the Bible and some of the attacks on the Bible and some of the claims that some of the scholars make against it that are false. And then we have a whole section about the church and another section also about Christmas. And we also have a section about Islam, a very lengthy section about Islam, because I think Islam is certainly the biggest threat, I think, ultimately to the Christian faith, you know, ultimately, in my opinion. And then I also have a section on Christian history, and there's a section on death as well, because Jesus Christ conquered the grave. That's our ultimate enemy. The ultimate enemy is death, and Jesus has taken care of that as well.
Amen. He has. Jerry, I appreciate you putting these articles together. The Unstoppable Jesus Christ by Dr. Jerry Newcomb. Hey, great having you on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Anytime.
All right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am going to address something that I have addressed many times before, but I think it's appropriate to do. I am not discouraged. I am not down. I am not hopeless. I'm not ready to throw in the towel. I'm not ready to quit on any front because Jesus is Lord, because God sits enthroned in heaven, because what God has promised will come to pass, and one day this earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the seas. It will happen. One day, friend and foe alike, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus, the Messiah, is Lord to the glory of the Father. That will all happen. There will be an ongoing great harvest of the nations. The Holy Spirit will be poured out upon people from every background. There will be a massive turning of Jewish people to the Lord. These things will happen as surely as God is God. They will happen. When you live with that reality, how can you be discouraged about a temporary setback today? Here, let's just say you had seen the final score of the Super Bowl game. All right, let's say you were an ardent New England Patriots fan, and you had seen the final score of the game and saw that the Patriots won in overtime. And you knew that. As you're watching the game, the more lopsided it got. What was it, Atlanta up 28-3 or something like that? I mean, if you put money down then, if you were just watching the game live and said, I'm going to bet on the Patriots winning, what, a few minutes left in the third quarter, and no team has ever come back from more than 14 down, another 25 down with a little over a quarter left. I mean, there's no way there was even possible anything like that could even be considered, not even countenanced, obviously. But if you read in the newspaper, you know, Patriots, amazing comeback, win in overtime, and but you didn't get a chance to see the game, then you watched it from beginning to end, you'd watch it with a very different attitude. You think, how did they come back? When did they come back? How in the world did this happen? But you wouldn't have the attitude you would have had during the game, which is, oh, no, this is crazy. I'm not going to watch this anymore. How many times? Have maybe if you're a sports fan, have you been guilty of turning a game off because there's no way your team was going to win? Turn it off, forget it. It's too late. You know it's over. And you can't bear to watch it anymore, only to find out that your team made an amazing comeback. I remember as a boy, the New York Knicks were on a winning streak. And I believe I was listening to the game on the radio, and they were down like 5 points with, I don't know, 15 seconds, whatever it was. And I thought, oh, forget this. And then next day I hear, you know, the Knicks winning streak continued. I thought, no, it didn't continue. They lost last night. I knew they lost. Well, they made one of these crazy comebacks in the last few seconds. So my point is, if you knew that in advance, it would color your attitude, right? If if you got a diagnosis, a terrible diagnosis with someone very close to you in the family, and they were diagnosed with cancer and the doctors don't give you much hope, well, that's a terrible blow, and that's your whole world can collapse at that moment. And even if you know the Lord, it can be a terrible blow to hear something like that. But if I could show you pictures of you and that loved one 30 years from now enjoying life together with health and vibrancy, it's like, I don't know how we got through it, but obviously we got through it because that's 30 years in the future and we're both healthy and vibrant. So when you have that certainty of the future, whatever your attitude would be, if you got that report from the doctor, it's like, oh my, this is serious, but I know there's a solution. I know God's going to help us. Now, look, we don't get delivered from every difficulty. People do die of cancer. Believers suffer like other people in this world. I understand that. And yet, there is a fundamental confidence by which I live. For example, next week, God willing, next Thursday night, I'm debating an Orthodox Jewish lawyer on the question, is Jesus the Jewish Messiah? And it seems to be widely advertised in the Jewish community of Greater Atlanta. I'm thrilled with that. It's going to be Kennesaw State University near Atlanta. And thrilled to have the opportunity. I can't predict what's going to happen in advance. I've never debated Asher Norman. Don't know what to expect aside from I know what he's written. I do my best to prepare. And my goal is not to shine as a great debater, but to have Jesus shine as the great Messiah and Savior. But I can't tell you what's going to happen in the debate in advance. I can't tell you what's going to happen to the Jewish listeners there. But I do know ultimately, I can't tell you what's going to happen to Asher Norman himself. But I can tell you ultimately that the name of Jesus Yeshua will be revered in the Jewish community worldwide. That the day will come, certainly by the end of this age, and hopefully with increasing measure before it, where the name of Jesus Yeshua, instead of being reviled, will be revered. I know that as surely as I'm sitting here talking to you on radio right now. Because of that, I live with a certain hope and a certain confidence. So I want to encourage you to have an attitude that is one of light, not darkness. The darkness, oh, it's fearful. The darkness is hopeless. The darkness is, what are we going to do? But light shines. There is confidence in the light. There is confidence where we gaze into the light, and that light now illuminates everything around us. That's why Jesus in John 9, when he sees the man born blind, he doesn't see it as who sinned. He sees it as an opportunity for God to be glorified through healing the man. When Lazarus dies, he doesn't see this as a point of despair. He sees it as an opportunity to glorify God through the raising of Lazarus from the dead. In fact, when he's sick, better that he dies so he can be raised from the dead for the greater glory of God. The mentality of the light sees the obstacles, the hardships, the difficulties as an opportunity through which God can be glorified. You with me on that? So let us have the attitude of light in the midst of darkness. Friends, let me be an encouragement to you. Let me be a voice of hope and encouragement and strength and courage to you. Sign up for my weekly newsletter. This way, every week, as soon as there's a new article out, as soon as there's a new video out, you'll know at the end of the week, you'll have a summary of here are the key articles we wrote, here's what they're about, here are the key videos we put out, here's what they're about, so you won't miss anything. So go to thelineoffire.org, sign up for our newsletter if you haven't done it. Take only a moment to do, just a few seconds actually, and then connect with us. There are links you can connect on Facebook, on Twitter. This way, the moment things go live, new article, new video, boom, you will know about it. And check out our digital library. We've got a bunch of new videos that have gone up, new articles as well. Yeah, some of the videos, when should a Christian be disfellowshipped? Or how much should we submit to spiritual leaders? Why are millennials protesting? And is there a hidden 666 in the Walt Disney logo? Yeah, that's getting the most views of any of the videos. So check all those out on thelineoffire.org in the digital library, and let us minister to you. And thank you in advance for standing with us, for your donations, for your help, for your support. Together, we are making a difference. My bottom line today, the light continues to shine in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome us.